9:35, it's 25 minutes away from 10 o'clock and time for our already Monday morning conversation. Ben Parsons had a conversation with me earlier on the telephone. He's here in person now. Morning, Ben.
Good morning, Jeff. Long time no talk.
Huh? Yes, it's been a few minutes here. I'm glad you got the flannel shirt note this morning. Thank you very much for, you know, being right on board with the dress code today.
Absolutely, we coordinate.
Yes. We were talking earlier about real estate stuff. And what did we talk about again? I got so much on my mind today, Ben. I'm sorry.
That's okay. And I think, what is it, the short-timers, you know, we got vacation on the horizon.
Yeah.
So just trying to wrap up that last little bit.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about game cams and stuff out in the woods and stuff. Yeah, that could be a great tool. I was going to say, when people post their plot of land with RE/MAX Property Pros and you're the agent in charge, do you have any game cams? Is that like an automatic thing if you're selling land? Ask the question, do you have any game cam picks?
I always ask.
Okay.
I always ask. And
are most guys doing it now?
Most people are, and some folks really take it seriously. They've got notebooks full of SD cards that they hang on to or folders on their computers where they've saved, you know, the good pictures for a long time. And
we know that the inventory for homes is really low right now. What about land? Is there more land for sale, generally speaking, than there are homes?
Usually that's the case.
Okay.
There's always more land on the market than there are homes, especially move-in ready homes. And but the thing is, you know, we get kind of picky. You know, we know what we want. We don't want to settle. And but when it comes to, hey, you've got to be in this area for work or for family, sometimes we settle and say, well, this is the house that we can afford. Let's go ahead and, you know, put the clothes in the closet and get to living life. Land, especially recreational land, where maybe the owner or the buyer doesn't intend on building or at least building anytime soon, if you're hunting it, we're looking for specific habitat. We're looking for specific travel corridors. We're looking for, you know, neighbors that are going to participate in the same management goals that we're looking for. So, you know, real estate, it's like snowflakes. No two pieces are alike. So we tend to be a little more picky when it comes to land.
I never thought of considering the neighbors and how they use their land that abuts yours. I never even thought of that whole situation. Does that usually go okay?
Usually it does, as long as people know what they're getting into.
Okay.
You know, we see quality deer management, QDM. If you see a sign that's hanging up on the neighbor's property, hey, we practice QDM, or if you, you know, talk to the DNR and you find out, hey, we're participating in DMAP, and, you know, so if you have neighbors that are trying to grow larger bucks or more turkey numbers and things like that, and that's the goal that you have as well, that tends to even be a selling point.
I grew up in Wisconsin, Ben. I grew up never seeing bald eagles flying. I grew up not knowing about wild turkeys and the fact that they even exist. And so we got rid of the DDT, and now we have all these beautiful bald eagles flying all over the state. I never saw a wild turkey until I moved to Eagle River. And I thought, oh, my gosh, what's going on up here? I've never seen turkeys like that. And they were all over the place at that point. There was some point in there where the DNR decided, you know, we're going to bring back the wild turkey population. And it has been a huge, massive success. You see wild turkeys all over the place now in every part of the state. Isn't that true?
It is true. Yeah. And numbers do fluctuate. You know, if we have a hard winter, that affects their numbers. If you're in an area that has a high predator number, I mean, that makes a difference. Believe it or not, a couple years ago, I harvested a nice mature gobbler. It was a double-bearded gobbler, and it was shy a couple toes. And I got to doing a little bit of research and found out that some of our winters, you know, would get so cold that a toe would actually freeze and break off while they're up in the roost. So this turkey was missing a toe on each foot.
So the turkeys, even with some of the terrible winters that we've had, it's been a very mild one. No stress on any animals this winter, that's for sure. I'm hoping that's going to mean good things for herds and flocks and all that kind of stuff. But if, especially with turkey, because that's coming up. I'm glad that you mentioned turkey because turkey hunting season is coming right up. And so what are people looking for with ideal turkey woods? What's the best kind of habitat for turkeys?
Well, for hunting spring turkey, it's nice to have an open area, a clear area, whether it's a field or a road or a power line, because you know, these mature toms, they like to get out in these open areas and strut. They puff up and they really show their stuff to attract the ladies. And they prefer to do that in an area that's got an opening. It's not necessary. I've harvested just as many, if not more, birds in the woods without a clearing in sight, as much as I have in an opening. But now my style of hunting that I prefer is, we call it running and gunning,
okay,
where we have a huge plot of public land, and I like to walk maybe 100 yards and call, and walk 100 yards and call, and try to get that responsive gobbler and set up on that gobbler as they're coming in. And so it's very mobile. We put on a lot of miles on the boots. Do I sit in a blind at the edge of a field sometimes? Sure. If we have a flock that's patterned and we know they're coming into this field, that may be a backup plan where we set in a blind on a field. But that's not my preferred method.
Now that you bring it up, I'm not familiar with turkey and how they behave and such, but I know I've seen, like when I'm on Highway 86, I see the same flock of turkey almost on a daily basis, and I'm thinking, boy, are there any toms in this whole brood of turkeys here? I see a bunch of little ones. They have babies all year long too, don't they?
Well, their eggs, their eggs develop at different stages.
Okay.
So there was, I have a friend that accidentally harvested a bearded hen years ago. You know, we were just getting started, and the regulations called for bearded turkeys. It didn't say male or female. It said bearded turkeys. Well, this hen actually had quite a beard on it. Huh. And as we were field dressing that turkey out, it had eggs all the way from, you could crack the shell and make an omelet, all the way down to, you know, the size of a little BB and everything in between. So they will lay eggs. And then, let's say early on, a hen has a nest and she has her eggs, and a predator comes and raids that nest. If it's early enough in the season, she'll go back out, find her boyfriend again, and try again.
Huh. Well, nature takes care of its own, I guess. But the point I was going to get to was that when I see turkeys in the woods, I never see the puffed up ones with all the colors showing and all that kind of stuff. But I have seen them in fields, so that's a behavioral thing.
It is.
Okay.
It is, yeah.
I was always wondering about that. So when it comes to buying a piece of land and you want to hunt turkeys on it, I guess you would find an area that's got some water, some woods, and a little bit of open land.
Exactly. And, you know, it's funny. I grew up thinking that the wild turkey preferred big, mature trees, kind of open forest, like what we would see in an oak stand or a maple stand. But once again, you know, moving to northern Wisconsin 14 years ago, I've seen just as many come at me through tag alder swamps, through real thick balsam thickets. And, you know, so they've definitely adapted to the type of woods that we have here. And now you're not going to see them strutting in a tag alder swamp.
Okay.
But once they come out of that tag alder swamp, they're going to puff up and off for the ladies. But it's interesting, you know, in the spring when things start thawing out, you know, these swamps where the water is still kind of moving subsurface in the soil, that brings a lot of worms, and that's usually where we start seeing marsh marigolds and some vegetation pop up in the swamps, right?
Right.
Well, that's very important for food when it comes to wild turkey and grouse. And so when you're shopping for land, and don't look at a swamp and say there's no value to it. There is value to it for something, for some species. As humans, we may not want to push through that tag alder swamp, but the turkeys and the grouse, you know, they're picking worms out of that mud, and it's a very important food source.
And the deer like to hide there, I understand, too, right?
Absolutely.
So is when somebody comes to Ben the Man for Land Parsons, when they're looking for hunt land especially, you've got so much expertise. Not only are you out there hunting yourself, but your career as a man in the woods. What was what would you call that? Before you got into real estate, what were you?
Oh, forester.
Forester. Yeah. That's how I was trying to find the official name. You're a forester first, so you bring all this knowledge to the table. Plus, you like to hunt yourself. So, is there such a thing as a perfect piece of land that's going to make a guy that likes to hunt everything? He wants to get out in the woods for every season. Do we have a lot of pieces of land that satisfy those needs, or are more of our land parcels here more specialized toward maybe deer or turkey or coyotes, whatever guys are hunting for? Can you break that down a little bit?
You know, that's all about acreage. Okay. You know, if our budget is only going to allow 20 acres or 40 acres, we may be a little bit limited on what is on that acreage. There may not be a field. So that's where you've got to look at your neighbors. You know, when you look at the overhead satellite photos online and or on your Onyx app or something like that, you want to zoom out and say, all right, well, I don't have an ag field on or food plots on the property I'm buying, but what's on the neighbor's property? You know, the thing is, animals, they travel a lot. You know, they're not going to pick a 40 and say, this is my 40 and I will, you know, live and die here. No, they're traveling all over. Okay. So you want to have that piece of property where they cross through. And if you have the budget, you're better off buying more acreage. The more acres you have, the more likely you are to have diversity in tree species, in vegetative cover, in soil types, and so you can make it a perfect piece of property where, if it's big enough, the animals don't have to leave if they don't want to.
Okay. And if you want to build on that property, that presents another issue, because you're not going to build anything in a swamp. You're going to need some high land to build on, so you're looking for that property with a little bit of everything.
Right, a little bit of everything. And understand, too, that if you're buying a property to hunt on and build on, once you build that structure, it will impact the wildlife travel and,
okay,
and where they're going to be and where they feel comfortable being. So it will make a difference.
Never even thought of that. Somebody buys their dream piece of land to live and hunt on. They start hunting there. They're building as they go, and all of a sudden the animal population goes down a little bit. That's got to be a terrible feeling. So how do you avoid that? Is there any avoiding that?
Well, and it's not that the population goes down because of the
building. They're just traveling somewhere else.
Yeah, they've just moved somewhere else. You've impacted their travel corridor. So getting out there, learning what the changes in those patterns are, is very important. And eventually those animals will get used to the structure being there. They will learn the people that live there when they drive off in their car, when they come home from work, when they're going to be, you know, on the deck with a crossbow or a rifle.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to figure that out over time.
Got it. So spring turkey season is coming up. Is there still plenty of time to get the piece of land and get hunting on their own land before the season opens?
Plenty of time to get the land, to pattern the birds. Now, to get your tags, well, that time to ensure that you get a tag is passed. You know, we applied for our tags back in December, but there is time to pick up a bonus tag during the week of March 18th through the 22nd. There are leftover tags in every zone in Wisconsin except for Zone 6. And one of the things that, you know, turkey hunting in Wisconsin is different than anywhere else that I had ever hunted before. You have a turkey season. It's, you know, March, April, May.
Okay.
And you have a tag, and it's good for any of those days, any of those areas. There weren't zones, there weren't time periods, there weren't seasons. It was one big season. And I've gotten to like how Wisconsin handles their spring turkey season. Each week is considered a season.
Okay.
So you have, you know, season A, B, C, D, E, right? So you have all these time periods where you have that week to fulfill that tag.
Got it.
And then you have zones. So the state is divided up into multiple zones. So when you get a turkey tag, like my first tag is in season B for zone 5. And so zone 5 is going to be, you know, around that Rhinelander area, Highway 8, you know, give or take east of the river. So I have the week of April 24th through the 30th, that's season B, to fulfill that tag. If I don't fill that tag in that week, I'm eating tag soup.
Okay.
So I try my best to get a bonus tag in different zones. So through the month of April, I'm out in the woods. If I'm not helping a customer with land, I'm out myself trying to fill a tag somewhere in the state.
I think that folks in this area that are looking for a specific piece of land for a specific thing, especially when it comes to outdoor recreation, hunting and that kind of stuff, fishing, it's pretty good that we've got Ben the Man for Land Parsons working up north here with all of your knowledge and expertise. I think that's got to be a great tool for anybody looking.
it was a natural fit. You know, forestry, the experience, and people ask me questions, or even other agents ask me, you know, can you teach me this? Can you teach me that? And a lot of, I can try to tell someone what they're looking at on an air photo, or, you know, by looking at soil maps. But the thing is, you know, I've spent 25 years taking a screen and looking at what's on the screen, the sat photos, the air photos, and then going to those places and boots on the ground, walking those acres. So eventually your brain makes this correlation between what you see on a screen or what you see on that paper map, sure, versus what you're seeing in person. And it's not something that I can teach someone in a couple hours or a couple days. It takes years to build that knowledge.
So having you in their corner is going to save a lot of learning time, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we can cover anything from what you can grow there in a food plot because of the soil to timber management. We could really go down a rabbit hole there.
Spring breakup time's upon us, and that presents a challenge for guys like you trying to get back in the woods in certain places. You got to be careful about the roads, and especially this time of year. And so what can we talk about that?
Yeah, boots. Put on some knee boots.
No ATVs in trucks, yeah.
Yep. Stay off the ATVs, stay out of the trucks. And, you know, I'm reaching out to the sellers that either maybe you have your property on the market or you're thinking about it. This time of year, you know, the frost is still in the ground, but we're starting to thaw out on top, especially with the melting snow, the rain that we got. That top layer is going to be really sloppy. And, you know, all that time that you spent building those trail systems, putting in a road, driveway, you can really create some expensive damage.
Yeah.
So at this point in time, the folks that my selling clients, you know, I recommend to them, don't drive in there, don't allow with any showings, don't allow the showing agent or that potential buyer to drive. You're going to create a lot of expensive damage this time of year. So stay off the roads, put on the boots. If you got to see the land right now, put on the boots and just walk it.
Good advice. So that's something to keep in mind. ATV registration renewals are coming up here at the end of the month too, guys. Got to remember that.
Yep, I've got one ATV that's due at the end of the month. So if your ATV has that dark red sticker with the 2024 on it, you've got till the end of this month to get that registration renewed.
We've got about 2 minutes. Ben, Ma's Place is still for sale there in Gleason. I understand fantastic fish fry, and they're really known for being available for people on those trails, and they're busier than most people think.
They really are. I mean, these gals have run a great business. They've done a lot of remodeling. You walk in, it's clean, it's well kept. The food is awesome. Some of the best trout fishing in the streams around there, and not just the Prairie River. A lot of the tributaries are holding large numbers of trout. And then, of course, the Harrison Hills ATV trails. This is on the southern tip of the Harrison Hills trail system. So they've been busy all winter, but they're getting ready to enter a busy spring and a busy summer. So if there's someone out there that is thinking about going into the restaurant business, there is an unfinished apartment in the basement that you could live in. You work the restaurant upstairs in a 4-car detached garage. It's a perfect setup for someone that wants to get in that business and start making some money.
And they bought a couple years ago. They paid the place off in 2 years or so because they're so busy. They got that kind of business coming in there, so it's not a long-term ROI.
Exactly. Yep, they had it paid off, and then, of course, the money keeps coming in, and they are negotiable. They're ready to retire.
Oak Wilt is coming in early this year, and Ted Foley's going to probably talk about that here some more, but I just don't want to – we're out of time here, Ben. I want to talk about the Purple Heart Homes fundraiser that's coming up. That's going to be one of the most important things we talk about here. Tell us about that.
So coming up Memorial Day weekend, we're working on the planning phases of that, but Purple Heart Homes is – we've got a chapter started here in the Northwoods. We're hoping to have a band at a local establishment and some raffles and prizes and things like that. We've got two applicants that are waiting for the funds to come in for a wheelchair ramp and then a bathroom, taking out the tub and putting in a walk-in shower. These are veterans that need our help. They need better accessibility in their home, and this is what we're attempting to do with our Purple Heart Homes chapter.
And I know between you and Kim Brixis at Remax Property Pros, you're going to keep us up to date on all the locations and times and stuff so that a whole community can help out.
Absolutely. Yep. You'll be hearing more about it in the future.
Ben the man, Philan Parsons from RE/MAX Property Pros. Ben, what's the best way people can talk to you and start a conversation of their own?
A call or text to 715-550-5683 is usually the best way to get a hold of me. If you're at work and you don't want the boss to see you on your phone, shoot an email to benthemanforland@gmail.com.
Got it, Ben. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Sounds good. Enjoy your vacation.
I'm going to do that. Ben Parsons from RE/MAX Property Pros here in Tomahawk with us this morning for our Monday morning conversation. I got to shut down the Sunrise Show because I got vacation coming up after this break.